Welcome to the I-29 Moo U Dairy Podcast. The I-29 Moo University is a consortium of the land-grant universities located in Minnesota, Iowa, South Dakota, and Nebraska. This podcast covers timely news, information, and research for today's dairy industry.
Hi, my name is Jim Sulfur, and on this episode of the I-29 Moo University, we will be discussing our upcoming dairy beef short course that we've done for, I don't know if it's been about 15 years or now. And as I mentioned, my name is Jim Sulfur. I'm with the University of Minnesota, and I'm really honored today, actually, a person who's usually behind the scenes editing our podcast, and that would be Brittany is with us today, and also a colleague that I really am honored to call a colleague is Melissa Runk, and she is a beef specialist actually dated down in Southwest Minnesota. So welcome, Melissa and Brittany.
Thank you, Jim. Yeah, I've been with Extension for, I think it's close to 14 years, but just very recently, about a little over a year now, that I have been in my position as the beef educator. You said located down in Southwest Minnesota, down in Worthington. I guess my interest is, it's pretty broad, but the reason that, I mean, that kind of got in touch with, or that got brought onto this group was in my position as a local educator, just being down there in Southwest Minnesota. We've got a lot of producers who have been feeding out, you know, it used to be kind of the straight purebred dairy steers. And then as, you know, kind of the transition came to the industry and we started transitioning over to more of these beef on dairy, just having a lot of those, some calf growers and a number of those feedlots down in the area has really kind of sparked my interest. And so I've been on the committee for, I want to say it's probably been 5 years now. This segment of the industry has always fascinated me just because in terms of a whole systems approach, I'm very interested in terms of how we're making these calves, how we're caring for them, and then, of course, how it really pertained to me before I took on the statewide role was, you know, them coming into the feedlot and how are we managing for these cattle, and just finding out more information as more research is done on these kind of cattle, it just has been really applicable to the producers that I predominantly work with.
Okay, Brittany, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, hello, everyone. My name is Brittany Morse. As Jim said, I'm normally on the back end of this. How I got roped into I-29 Moo U is I serve as their communications coordinator. So anytime you see a podcast, anything you see on the website, the Facebook page, I had a hand in it. So I also hail from southwestern Minnesota. I live near Mineota, which is by Marshall. And I am a dairy producer with my family. We milk about 100 cows, Holsteins, Jerseys, Brown Swiss, and crossbreds. The one thing about the dairy beef short course that really piques my interest is that my family, we also have a feedlot. So any animal that's born on our farm, whether it's a dairy heifer, a beef on dairy cross, or, you know, just a straight Holstein bull calf on our farm, it stays and goes somewhere. On our farm, I take care of the calves. And so I really am interested in the calf side of it, but also how the whole system goes from calf until, you know, they leave. I'm interested in from the calf up until, you know, basically calf to table. So it's just really interesting to me because there's just so many facets of the dairy beef that haven't really been explored that much, or there's still a lot to learn about it. So I'm really excited that we're doing this short course because there's just so much to learn, and producers and in other industry professionals that come to this event, we can all learn from each other. We can say, you know what? I don't really care for the Jersey Charolais crosses, and here's why. You know, and they work great in the hutches, or, you know, something happens here, just for example. So there's just a lot of great conversations that happen at this short course, and I'm just really excited that I-29 is able to put it on again this year.
Yeah, it's interesting. When we started this whole thing, which, as I mentioned, it's maybe 15 years ago or so, you can tell by the title, it's a dairy beef short course. And at that time, they were all Holsteins. I mean, in reality, that's what we were feeding out as Holsteins. And over time, of course, that has really morphed and changed. So from a dairy person, it's just been kind of fun to see because you know, 15 or 20 years ago, the only time you would ever see a crossbred calf is there were people that maybe ran an Angus bull with their heifers because they wanted to avoid calving difficulty. At least that was their theory. And now it's really much more a strategic breeding strategy. Part of that is because we didn't want all these extra heifers, and there was always a premium for a crossbred calf. But now it's become so strategic just because of these beef prices of these calves. And it's really an important part of the profitability of a dairy farm right now. If you're listening and you're not from a dairy farm, that's really increased, partly because milk prices have been kind of tough over the last couple of years. And these beef prices on both calves and cull cows has really gone up. So, Melissa, I know you were instrumental in helping develop this program. Do you talk a little bit about what speakers and maybe some of the topics that we have as far as on the dairy beef short course?
Sure. Starting off our program, we have and kind of no stranger to extension, but he used to be with us, Dr. Joe Armstrong. He was in cattle production systems role, but he's a vet with Zoetis Technical Service Veterinarian, his official title, and he's going to talk to us on kind of a very broad topic, but one that is so pertinent and so timely: lessons in lung health. Talking about some timely vaccinations, some management criteria, and what are some of those changes that we can be implementing on the calf side of things, as far as just making these calves healthier, and how are we monitoring this? Maybe some different management strategies. These calves that are being, do need to be treated, and how do we maybe manage them a little bit differently as they're going into their next stage of production. We also have from NDSU, we have Dr. Kendall Swanson, who is going to be talking about the energetics of changes in liver size and health in calves. So kind of focusing on, how calves are using energy at the organ level. How much energy does that liver consume? As we're trying to get these calves to, grow, 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 and we're really trying to, maximize that performance out of them. But, we can have, 20 to 30% of our maintenance energy can be, tied up in that liver function. So just kind of divulging, looking a little bit on how does that change as the calf is going throughout the production cycle. And then we also have from Iowa State University, Dr. Dathan Smercek, who is going to be talking about the effect of growth-enhancing technologies on mineral requirements in beef cattle. So, really kind of looking at, as again, as we're trying to maximize efficiency and productivity on these beef on dairy calves, are we feeding enough minerals to support that additional and that fast-paced, rapid type of growth? And then we're gonna move into in our afternoon presentations. We will have Dr. Warren Ruschke from South Dakota State University. He's gonna be talking on, I think, a very timely topic: what's going on with carcass size? As you kind of alluded to, Jim, just where the cattle markets are at. We know that we have this shortage of number of head of cattle, and we're just not really experiencing those price discounts on those big, heavy carcasses on the packer side of things. So he's going to be talking about some of those the good things, the negatives with all of that, and what's going on. Like, how big can we actually take these cattle before we start seeing kind of a detriment on performance and some other issues associated with that. And then something that we're going to follow that up with in the afternoon that kind of wrap everything together, I think. And we had this a couple years ago, if you remember, Jim. We had that panel discussion that kind of focused more on the baby calf side of facilities. Now we're switching gears a little bit, and we're going to do a producer panel discussion focusing on finishing facilities. And just we term that, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And it's going to be industry and a producer panel. And going to be facilitated by myself and our MC, Kimmy Devaney. And we've got a number of people that I'm pretty excited to bring on there. We've got Jared Quisted from South Dakota, is going to be talking about some bed packs and his open lot facilities. From Wilmot, Minnesota, we've got Russ Penning coming back from Summit Lake Livestock, and he's got some slat barns. And we're going to have Grant Binford. He's got some slat barns, solid floor barns. He's also got he's been doing the rubber mats on their slatted floor barns. So something a little different there. And then we also have joining us from Central Confinement Services, LLC out of Nebraska. We're going to have Brad Linneberry there. They've been doing a number of different facility upgrades, renovations, new projects in the area, and going to kind of talk about what are some of the things that they're seeing and what are some of the changes and transitions and some of the work that they're doing for producers in our area.
I don't know about you guys, but I always look forward to the panels at the end of the day. I feel like that's where we get a lot of really great discussion. And, as someone who's industry and on farm, I really like to see both sides of it. So I think I'm just excited for it. I think it's always a really great way to kind of wrap up the day, but also kind of leave everyone wanting a little bit more and, interested to keep doing some research and keep learning about those different topics.
So, Brittany, what kind of facilities do you have? Sounds like you finish your steers.
Yep. So our steers, we have a couple monoslope barns. In our feedlot system, we have about 750 head of cattle.
Because I do think that's always an interesting, timely topic. And again, these aren't really the circles I run in, other than dairy producers have the same discussion. Do I have mounds outside? Now that works better for older heifers. Does it make up for improved feed efficiency for build facilities? In a previous life, I used to work with, I didn't personally work with them, but I managed a feed department. And we had producers with, at that time, most of them were the monoslope barns feeding inside, and or they would have outside lots. And that was a lot of the discussion. Now it seems like you're seeing more of these confinement slatted barns. Would you agree with that, Melissa or Brittany?
I do agree with that, Jim. And I think the other part of this panel discussion that some of the questions that I want to ask, and because it's going to vary based on the producers that we have on there, I think a lot of it, just in the conversations I've had with them, a lot of it comes down to time and management. And do you have people to be, if you have a solid floor barn, like do you have help to help you be cleaning out these barns? I'm not saying that like slatted floor barns are the answer, because I know that I've heard people that have all three different types of, or multitude of different facilities, and they still say that like when they have help, that the open lots are still, they get the best performance, cattle health is good, they can keep them a little bit cleaner. So I'm just really curious to hear, like we get that honest feedback. But I think, yeah, what to your point, Jim, I think that a lot of them, just as we're modernizing facilities, a lot of them are going to these monoslopes or some slatted or even solid floor barns.
What's the advantage of a slatted barn? I mean, the cost must be unbelievably higher. Is your feed efficiency better because they're kind of packed in there and they're a little confined? Why would I build? And I know we're going to have a panel here, right? So I don't expect you to
Right.
necessarily answer that. But why would you build a slatted for barn? The people that are doing it.
Keep them cleaner, because
Oh,
all the
okay.
manure is going down there. So maybe, and I'm not an agronomist by any stretch of the imagination, but I think it's a little bit more concentrated type of manure. So maybe a little bit better nutrient availability in terms of what you're able to collect, maybe, versus adding that additional bedding that you would need to, because you gotta have some sort of bedding in a solid floor barn. And it takes time. You gotta, move those cattle out of there, or get them off those facilities, and you gotta clean it every so often. So having a barn set up where you can run that pen of cattle out, come in and do, clean the facilities. I think that I couldn't tell you off the top of my head, because that's one of those things, like I've heard from both sides which one is more, where the cattle are more efficient. I've heard that it's more comfortable for for the cattle to be, so in terms of like lameness and some foot issues, that the cattle tend to maybe favor the solid floor barns, like with a bed pack inside, versus the slatted floor barns, which are maybe a little, think kind of colder, maybe a little bit wetter. So I'll be curious to hear from what the producers say, because some of them have both types of facilities, or they've transitioned from one to the other. So it'd be interesting to hear their honest feedback on where do they actually get the better performance.
Yeah, I think so too. I was talking to, this was a researcher, a good friend with a researcher was Zinpro. And I just asked what they were working on. He said, boy, we're working on a lot of like additives and stuff for these slatted beef barns because lameness was, so, and I don't know if it still is, but
It
at that
is.
time, and this was quite a while ago, about how much of an issue lameness was in these barns. And, he's a dairy guy like me. So he said, this is kind of a, it's kind of a new concept for me is to do research on beef confinement systems. So I think it's interesting. I think you mentioned it, Melissa. I've got friends that, either they were out of the dairy business or they finished dairy beef. And the big thing used to be with these straight bed Holsteins is they would get too big. And the packers would just, they would just not pay you if you had these big carcasses. And they said, I don't know now, the bigger the better. They just are willing to take, and they just really liked it. So I'm really curious to know what Warren has to say about this whole carcass size piece and maybe where that's headed. or where they think it's going to be, and some of the challenges I think with these great big carcasses, because I see some of these great big steers and I think, holy cow, those things have gotten big. No different than our dairy cows. I think, man, we're going to be competing with elephants here pretty soon. Man, but they're big, I mean, holy cow, they're
They
really
are.
big. So,
I would
Brittany, how
love.
big are the ones you finish? What are your breeds? And then what's your, if I, and maybe you do the marketing at your place. Heck, I don't know. But what do you, when do you, what size are they when you sell them?
So we're a little interesting. We have a little of everything, to be honest with you. We have some straight beef. So we have straight Angus, Simmental. We have a little bit of Herefords too. We have like five Herefords out there.
Oh, man.
But my family, we also custom feed some of the steers. So like three of the yards that we have, those are custom fed. So those are all straight beef and they all came out of South Dakota. So we have some straight Angus, straight Simmental, straight Hereford. So in addition to the animals that are born on our farm, we also will buy dairy beef crosses and, an occasional couple of Holstein bull calves from some other area dairies here in Southwest Minnesota. Kind of in total, our dairy beef crosses are a little bit of everything. They can be Holstein Angus, Holstein Simmental, Holstein Limousine, some Jersey Angus. We also have a couple of Brown Swiss Angus crosses. There is a local dairy here in our area that likes to do Charolais jerseys. So we have a lot of blonde calves that we've been buying. From my perspective, as someone who's industry and producer, I'm really interested to see the more research that gets done. What are the optimal crosses that we should be looking for? There's a lot of decisions that have to be made before we have an end product. So I'd like to know what should we be crossing to? And then I'm excited for Warren's presentation as well, because what we end up breeding for, and that really impacts the end product. So I'm really curious to see what Warren has to say and also what the producers on the panel have to say about, their sizes, their breeds, the different things that they've been noticing. So your question about how big they are, I would say we kind of sell them around that 1400 pounds is kind of where we shoot for. Now, I'll be honest, I'm a dairy girl. The dairy cows, that's where my heart is. And so I let my dad and my brothers do most of the marketing with these, on the beef side of things. But I do take care of those calves when they're little, and I really like to see how they end up, because I can go walk through the yard and say, okay, I remember you when you were little. It's great to see this is how this one's turning out. Or I can say, I wasn't sure how that cross was going to work, but that looks like it's working out.
Brittany, admit it, you're not a dairy person. You're a rabbit person. Never mind, I'm talking to you. You're in the rabbit barn taking care of your rabbits, and you run to
Well,
rabbit shows every weekend. That's what you
not every
like.
weekend. But the rabbits, that's just my weird hobby. But the rabbits get taken care of after the cows. That is the rule. The calves and the cows get taken care of first, and then the rabbits. Actually, this morning we had one of the feeders was out running around and actually got close to the rabbit barn. I was like, I've never had a steer in the rabbit barn, so that could be fun.
And for people that know, Brittany and I have this bond because she's got a three-legged dog named Jimmy. And so I've always got to ask her about her three-legged dog. I just really feel honored that Brittany would name a dog after me. I don't know how to feel about the three-leg thing. Maybe I ought to be hopping around on one leg. But Brittany, I always, don't I? I ask you all the time how Jimmy's doing.
Jimmy is currently doing great. He has some yak cheese that, if anyone can hear in the background, that is Jimmy chewing on his yak cheese.
Spoiled dog. That's all I can say because
I tell
I'm
you
not good
what,
enough.
that dog thought that he was going to be the one to put that feeder calf away.
So anyway, that's kind of fun. So a little bit about our personal lives too, right? I mean, that's always fun to know what people's lives are like. So do either one of you have anything else to add? I mean, Melissa, do you do a little sales pitch? I think we talked a lot about what's going on in the afternoon, but I think the morning there's some really good points. I think we're learning as an industry, a lot about these crosses and how they compare. And I think as a dairy industry, we haven't always done as good of a job as we can of getting these, whether they're bull calves or dairy beef calves, off to a good start. And that's really changed with the value of them. But, 10 or 15 years ago, these beef calves were kind of a sort of a byproduct. You would kind of think, I don't know. So we got a bull calf. I won't feed it. I don't care. Now they're really a valuable part, and I think that's a really good thing that we've taught that our dairy producers, you're just not dairy producers. You also produce another very, now really a very valuable product in beef, and we want that to be really high quality beef so that both the feedlots and you can maximize the value of those calves. So I think over time it's been kind of interesting and really good that we've come to value all the animals on the farm, including the males. I've always said, I'm kind of in the dairy industry where I've always worked, males are kind of worthless. And there's many days I think my wife would say that in the human species, that might be the situation too, when it comes to me, maybe. We don't need that many of us males around, right? So she might not argue. It's not just the dairy industry where males tend to be kind of worthless. And so that's good that that's changed too. So either comments from any of you, how do we get Melissa, any final comments?
I would just like to add that I think that in this just a lot of the conversations that I have with my advisor, Dr. Brad Hines, and Dr. Isaac Hagen, just having those conversations about like we know that there's sort of a disconnect, like you alluded to, Jim, that between the dairy industry who is raising these calves, these beef on dairy, and of course those feedlots who need these, they need to procure these calves because there aren't enough native, true native beef animals to fill their lots. And this program really is where those two segments of the entire cattle industry coincide. And so it's like if we know that this has been kind of an issue, also like you said, Jim, that how are we feeding them correctly? Like this is kind of the we have limited information, but of course, like the research is being done, it's getting better. Our understanding and our knowledge base is getting more comprehensive. And so now we need to sit down at the table as two segments of the industry and figure out how do we actually make sure that what we are raising on one hand is what you want to feed out on the other hand. And I just think that our collaboration of with all these different industry partners and speakers is going to bring that information and kind of bring some things to light. How should we actually be adjusting our rations? How do we need to optimize, just our mineral program, our health protocols? Like this is to answer some of those questions, like be there because it's going to be covered. And we've got such a great lineup of speakers. Like ask them, like some of these things that are still hanging out there. Maybe we're working on the research. Maybe it's something that's in the, in the works in the future. So be here and bring your questions along.
Yeah, and the date, I don't think we mentioned that. The date of this program, if you're interested, is March 17th. We start about 10 o'clock in the morning with the welcome, and then we're done by about 3:15 or so. So I don't know, Brittany, tell people how they get signed up. Then one other thing, this is maybe a question for Brittany. If you're listening to this, and it says a deadline to sign up, if you go to the website, it says March 10th. So you could be listening to this after that. Are we going to turn you away, or are we going to take away your birthday? What will happen if you come and you say this program is good, but boy, pre-registration has passed? If they just show up, what will happen to them? They can have my lunch.
We do have limited capacity. So if you are listening to this on March 11th and you're like, you know what? I'd be interested in that. Find our information on our website, i29muyu.com, and you can shoot me an email and I can direct you to the right avenue. And just we can make a call and just see if there's any openings left. And we usually in the past we've had a wait list as well.
Yeah, so
So
that's a good point. Oh, that do check. Just don't show up because we do have limited capacity in the room. Over the last half a dozen years or so, we actually have kind of a waiting list.
yeah, and Jim did mention the date is March 17th, and it's, from about 9:45 to 3:15, and it takes place at the Sanford Premier Center in Sioux Falls, and it's kind of in conjunction with Central Plains Dairy Expo, which I here in the Southwest, we like to call it the event of the season because it is anyone who's anyone ends up at Central Plains. It's a great, if you're unfamiliar with it, it's a great trade show that also has a lot of really great speakers. So kind of make a little bit of an event of it. You can come down on Tuesday. There's a welcome reception Tuesday night, at the Saint at the Denny, and kind of stay for a couple of days. There's a ton of great speakers, ton of great industry people to kind of keep going with these conversations that you've been having. And speaking of Central Plains, I-29 Muyu, we do have a booth. And you can certainly stop by. We might have some swag for you. Definitely kind of come have some conversation. I know I'll be there a little bit. Jim, you're going to be there a little bit as well.
All right, sounds good. Any other comments by anybody?
I guess for me, I'll just throw a dairy dairy related comment out. Dairy producers, what we do produce on our farms does impact the feedlots. So it is something to be cautious of. Not just your goal shouldn't be just to get a black calf. We do need to be conscious of what our end product is.
Hey, that's a good comment. Well, this has been really an honor for me to visit with people that are different than typically I may visit with. So thanks, Melissa, a colleague of mine. Nice to have her on the program, and also Brittany, who does all the work behind the scenes. So if this stuff all sounds good and the website looks good, don't give me any credit. Give it all to Brittany. That's all I'll say.
I'm just good at organizing and sorting and putting stuff where it belongs and getting it all together. I'm basically just, the air traffic control. And if you've ever met Jim, you know how hard that can be.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I was going to say I'm glad I've got really good air traffic controllers when I fly. So, yeah, that's really key. All right, thank you guys. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'd like to thank our annual sponsors, including our gold sponsor, Iowa Corn Growers Association. Please visit their website at iowacorn.org. We'd also like to thank our silver sponsors, Pioneer, Connor Agri Service, Diamond V, and Central Vet Clinic. I-29 Moo University is an equal opportunity educator. For the full discrimination statement, visit extension.iastate.edu/diversity/ext.